And welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, in for Ann. Since Social Ventures, a Columbus-based organization, opened its doors 5 years ago, social entrepreneurship in Central Ohio ballooned. Social enterprises are businesses that aren't necessarily concerned about profits for shareholders. These businesses are committed to making social change. With us is CEO of Social Ventures, Alan Proctor. Alan, nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, Gail. It's a delight to be here this morning.
Let's start with the beginning and explain what Social Ventures is all about and what you do.
Well, Social Ventures is an organization that's committed to really growing the social enterprise, what we call ecosystem. 5-6 years ago, there were only a handful of social enterprises. They're almost all owned and run by large nonprofits. There was almost no customer awareness. There was no organized source of grants or capital that was material. There just wasn't a lot going on. And we decided that this was a really new era in how to create change and good in a community, and we needed to build the ecosystem.
Can you explain what social entrepreneurship is? Because you are using the term and you understand it, but I'm not sure people even get what the idea is all about.
Well, social enterprise is an approach to business that says, I am really going to focus on a mission no differently than a nonprofit, but I'm going to support that mission by producing goods and services and using what I earn from that to create social impact. So think of it as nonprofits, but not on grants and donations. Instead, a company that is totally committed to make a difference. And it happens to sell goods and services in order to do that.
Do they make a profit at all for some of the folks who?
Well, of course,
somebody has to make a living there, right?
Well, I'm kind of smiling now because it's really unfortunate that we call nonprofits nonprofits, because the reality is every business, whether it's called a nonprofit or not, has to bring in more revenue or grants than it spends. Otherwise, you'd go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think in what you're getting at is a social enterprise can almost never be more profitable than a comparable company selling the same goods or services but not committing it all to a social mission.
I understand. And then you, 5 years ago, decided that you were going to try to help and push this type of enterprise in Central Ohio.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the motivations was to see some of the transformations we were able to achieve here in Columbus. And it really goes back to seeing what has made COSI what it is today. In 2004, you may recall, COSI had a levy campaign that didn't go well. And it was really in financial crisis. And the transformation that COSI made is that they heavily went into social enterprise, though they don't call it social enterprise. And what has happened since then is COSI has grown 100% without increasing its fundraising by a dollar because of its earned revenue activities. Do you know that they own a national consulting company?
And I was going to ask you then, so what are those business ventures that bring in dollars for them?
Well, COSI is an interesting example. How is it focused on earned revenues? It has a very active event program now. In many ways, that's a social enterprise because you have an event or you have an exhibit. You've only got one gallery. How do you balance between that? Their store now is run by professionals. Their cafeteria is all run by professionals. They're focused with very clear profit guidelines, so they can support COSI. And what has COSI done with that? COSI now has the largest free and reduced family membership program in the state of Ohio. They couldn't have done that without their social enterprise revenues.
And what they've done is made it more of a business, and with the business profits going to try to help others who wouldn't have a chance to see COSI.
You've got it. Absolutely.
When we talk about social enterprise, that's not something new. Goodwill has done it for a long time. Yes. You and I previously talked about Goodwill using their stores and the retail to fund their services for the disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Large companies like Patagonia, you know, they take some of what they do and put it into their choice of environmental projects.
Mm-hmm.
So what's new about this social enterprise? Or isn't there something new? It's just becoming more popular.
Well, that's actually two questions. Let me take each part of it.
I have a habit of doing that.
Think of it as you're a good person and you run a business and you want to accomplish some good things. You can be a business that has volunteer programs, or you make a couple thousand dollars donations a year. That's what we call a socially responsible business.
Okay.
Then at the other extreme, we have nonprofits who basically are dependent exclusively on donations and grants, and all they exist is for social impact. Then what we have in the middle are businesses that are moving a little towards more, I really want to accomplish some good with my company, or I'm going to recycle everything, or I'm going to be very environmentally conscious. And the investment community has called this impact investing, and these companies are labeled with three letters, ESG, Environmental Social Governance. And that's really popular today in the commercial investment community. But as you move away from, I'm just going to focus on my product and be a good person like fair trade coffee, and I'm actually going to do something with what my company produces, the revenues, the staff, and that's going to be my focus. I am going to make sure that what I create for impact dominates. So a very good example in the national stage is Tom's Shoes.
Okay. I was thinking of them.
Tom's Shoes is in the class of social enterprise that we call buy one, give one, which means you're giving away half your sales. That's a pretty big deal. But it's how they think about it and how that social mission dominates their thinking that makes them a social enterprise. So give away a shoe. Sounds easy, right? Well, selling shoes in stores is one distribution channel. Distributing shoes for free in third world countries is a totally different distribution channel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like creating a second business.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, Tom's Shoes, their goal was to help develop and foster the economies of these third world countries. Well, when they first started, they just delivered their shoes.
Correct.
And what happened was they discovered that they were putting the entire shoe repair cobbler business out of business. So that was counterproductive, right? So they said, our mission was to strengthen the economy. We thought by just giving away shoes we would do that. So they changed everything. So now the cobblers are their distribution channel. The cobblers find giving away shoes is a way to enhance their business. So they adapted how they behaved to make sure their social mission was true. Cost them more money, was more expensive. If they weren't a social enterprise, they'd say, well, I'm just going to get all the marketing and PR benefit of giving away shoes, but who cares what really happens?
It's very, very interesting. We're talking with Alan Proctor. He is the CEO of Social Ventures, and we're talking about social enterprises and what those mean. And listeners, we'd like to hear from you. How would you support a business if you knew that some of the profits were going to help others? Would you like to see more of those businesses open in Columbus? Give us a call at 614-292-8513. So that brings us to that question then, Alan. Are people in Columbus pretty responsive if they know a business has an aside of helping others?
Yes, I think they are. The part of what we're trying to be better at is the if they knew that it was a social enterprise.
Uh-huh.
That's why a lot of what we are doing is to try to make people more aware. For example, next Tuesday, we're having a huge free community celebration called Position to Prosper. We're going to have over 300 people there just celebrating the ability to buy social, to be able to create good by buying something. We put out... We've had a column in Business First for over 10 years where we always make people more aware of these entrepreneurs. We have a column every month in the Metropreneur, which is a different audience. So we're constantly looking for ways to do that. We also have created online, we have the only marketplace listing we know of in the United States that tries to list every single social enterprise in our region. It's not members or pay us to do it. Is we're just trying to make people aware of that. And we can go through dozens of examples of that. But I think the key is, do people know you're a social enterprise? One of the challenges in our community is helping customers and helping social enterprises be so proud of their social impact that they wear it on their chest. As this began, some of them, particularly our nonprofit-owned social enterprises, are kind of wary of talking about this. Some nonprofits are still worrying that if they knew we made money,
we wouldn't get any donations.
We wouldn't get any donations. Or some worry that if they knew that everyone we employed was formerly incarcerated, they may not come to our business. So we're still at that stage in our community of people seeing this as a plus.
And they're growing. Social ventures, what you do, part of it is marketing, helping these folks get the word out. What else do you do to help these companies then? Is there any financial involvement?
Well, one of the things that we formed in 2017, because we were seeing that there weren't as many sources of capital, is we formed a social ventures fund. It's the only private investment fund we know of that is totally committed to investing in social enterprises in a locality as opposed to on a national scale. We've attracted about 9 investors, and we are making investments in local social enterprises. What we also have been delighted to see is because of the profile that we have been able to raise, we are having social enterprise investors from outside our region come look at some of our social enterprises. Illinois Finance Fund, IFF, has just come into town, and they're getting more active. And we're working with them directly to combine our reviews and due diligence and investments with them.
But you'd like to see more of these type of investors.
We'd love to see more of these investors.
Do you see that as – well, compare us to other cities. You know, are you finding as many investors as other cities who are doing the same thing?
No. Austin's ahead of us. Chicago's ahead of us. San Francisco's ahead of us. Boulder's ahead of us. Toronto's ahead of us. Boston's ahead of us. New York's ahead of us.
And yet it seems to me that Columbus is, you know, we've turned into a hub locally, but they're by the number of businesses anyway.
I think one of the realities of being an investor in a social enterprise is you're looking for 2 returns on your investment. You're looking on it for a financial return, but you're looking for a social return. I'm going to invest in this company so I can help make an impact on reducing the number of women that are subject to trafficking. And I want to get some money on it, but I'm not going into this investment to get a 40% return on our money. I'll be happy to get a 4 or 5% return because I'm also making a difference, and I could have just donated money to a survivor, but I'm actually going to get my money back from that investment, hopefully, and I'll be able to do it again and again and again mm-hmm. and again. So a social enterprise investor is a person who's been able to take that next step and say, I can have a more impactful use of my money if I use it investing rather than just donating.
I read somewhere that boomers gave money to give money to nonprofits. Millennials want more hands-on experience and directly like social enterprise. Do you see that as being true and a true distinguishing generational thing?
Yes. I'd say in our community, the millennials, Gen X, however many labels we want, get it. The boomers aren't quite all there. The boomers aren't quite all there. The boomers, I'm a boomer. We were trained that when you invest to have a secure retirement, to make money, and if you love a cause, you write a donation check. Those are our options. The young people, well, they don't have a lot of money right now. So they're looking at different options. They have time. They can volunteer. And they can buy a cup of coffee. They can buy a muffin. They can buy a candle and make a difference.
And they look for those places.
And they look for those places.
Gotcha. Thank you very much, Alan. This is Alan Proctor, the CEO of Social Ventures, and we are talking about social enterprise here in Columbus. We're going to take a quick break. Listeners, you can join the conversation. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we'll be right back. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann. Since 2014, 90 businesses have opened in Central Ohio that label themselves as social enterprises. These businesses are not necessarily concerned about making money for owners and shareholders. They are concerned with doing good for society while making enough profit to keep the doors open. Still with us is Alan Proctor. He is the president and CEO of Social Ventures, an organization that supports social enterprises. Also with us, the founder of Fairhaven Lawn Care and Patriot Pride Paint, Eddie Rapp. Eddie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Gail.
And Eddie, you're a good example of someone who actually owns an enterprise business, a social enterprise business. Can you explain your two businesses and how they work?
I can, yeah. I've been with Lutheran Social Services for 13 years now, and we've always looked at the barriers of our homeless clients, what we can do to kind of support them and evaluate that on a year-to-year basis. So we looked about 11 years ago, and we were hiring other people to hire lawns at all of our properties. We were doing all these good things but paying a lot of money, and we had clients sitting in our shelters who had no employment or had barriers to employment. So we kind of looked at it, and I said, why not hire ourselves? Let's start this. I think Alan mentioned earlier in the show, this really wasn't heard of 11 years ago. There was a few out there, but not very many. They weren't necessarily called social enterprise. So I got together with our group at LSS, and we started talking. I'm like, this makes sense. Let's get them employed. Let's employ them ourselves. So what we do for both Fairhaven Lawn Care and Patriot Pride Painting is we interview our clients, those that are looking for employment. They're currently in one of our programs, so they're homeless or going through a sober living program or something like that. And we really evaluate the total situation. If they're wanting to work and willing to work, then we will hire them, train them. We train them on all skills from a lawn care standpoint, all skills on a painting standpoint. Our ultimate goal is to get them back on their feet. Most, I would say 99% are homeless at the time they come to us and start working. Our success rates right now of housing is about a 96%. So if you start,
I was just going to ask, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing, Eddie.
Once you start working with us, we usually can get you housed pretty quickly. I mean, there's income there, which most of them didn't have. There's some other assistance. And then, we're in the high 70s, 78% of those also move and advance on to better, bigger careers, which is our ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is to, it sounds terrible, but we want them to work with us temporarily so they can go get something better and grow in that. So we don't necessarily say you have to stay in lawn care or painting. We're willing to work with work partners anywhere in the community, something our clients want to do.
Were you nervous about that in the beginning, taking on people who you might have to train even to know how to clock in and show up?
Very nervous. A lot of these folks have not had to get up at 8 o'clock, and 8 o'clock is probably being generous for our lawn care crew. They're usually up before that. Just day to day, 5 days a week working for a lot of these folks is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's been so many years. So yeah, we worried about, people showing up, staying, being able, lawn care is not an easy business either. It's very physical. It was 100 and some degrees, I think, last week.
Yes.
Or the week before. So, you're enduring a lot there. So we had some concerns. And then we also had the social side of it of, are people going to want or allow, you know, the stereotype homeless people to come onto our properties or paint our houses. Or
And what did you find with that?
The first couple years we battled it. You know, I think Lutheran Social Services, as long as we've been around and as big as we are and what we do, I think there was some comfort in that. We learned our first couple years of, you know, making sure that we, you know,
vetted the right people.
Well, that and my vision when I went into it was, you know, and I'm a social worker at trade and this is what I do is, you know, well, we're helping people. You know, what are you worried about? You know, and it kind of blew back at me when I started getting some of the questions from customers. I'm like, well, yeah, we do background checks. We do all that. But why are you that concerned? And, you know, it just kind of grew at that. So.
And Alan, you in your social ventures, what kind of help assistance do you provide people like Eddie?
Well, we give Eddie exposure. We let people know about him. We highlight the fact that if you want to support the homeless population, do you get your lawn mowed? Do you get your house painted? We started a huge effort in 2018 to start talking to the large businesses in town about, is there a way you can start carving out some of your business to channel to these social enterprises? And it resulted in we put together a social enterprise business-to-business buying guide where we're going to businesses and saying, can we talk to your facilities people? Can we talk to your HR department? You know, can we talk to your events folks? Because these are businesses that make a difference. And what we've also found is these companies often have internal sustainable development goals they're trying to achieve, or they have diversity inclusion goals they want to achieve. And they just aren't aware that they can use purchasing program to make their community better. And the other thing, we just talk about what a good job they did. Painter Pride painted my house. I thought they did a great job.
And when it comes to the employees, how many do you have to turn away? Or can you really interview them, Eddie, from the beginning and so at this point know who you think is going to work out so that, you know, it's not difficult for you to have to say you can't be part of the team anymore?
Yeah, no, we kind of vet when they come in. We also have a process. There's an application process they fill out that kind of gives us a little bit of history, where they're at currently, what their dreams are, really. You know, you don't have to be a painter the rest of your life, for example. And we're able to vet some of those folks and really look from day one when they enter our shelter. One, are you able, ready to work? Two, can you do this type of work? And we do a whole spreadsheet. And scores, if you score high enough, you're ready to go. If not, it's not that we turn you away. It's, hey, we need to work on A, B, and C, and then we'll be ready, you know, to put you in the field. So we don't turn anyone away. I mean, anyone in any of our programs that wants to work, we're going to find something, you know, for you to do.
And I think one thing that's really important to talk about, and Eddie, if you'd go into this in some more detail, is we have about 30 social enterprises that are really focused on employment. And they do a lot more than screen. They provide a tremendous amount of services that a conventional business would never do. And Eddie, why don't you talk about all the things you guys do for these employees?
Definitely. You know, being a part of the umbrella of Lutheran Social Services, we're able to provide case management. We're doing budgeting skills. We're meeting with folks once a week that are working with us. Even once they leave our shelter and get their own housing, we're following up with them. You know, finding out is everything okay? Because a lot of these guys, it could be these guys and girls, it could be the first time they have to pay rent, pay an electric bill, budget their money for food.
So this is a true mission for you. I mean, full mission, not just giving somebody a job. It's how to live your life.
Absolutely. And even if I want to say about 6 years ago, LSS took the mission of, you know, buying apartment buildings. We wanted to get a couple because landlords in the community, same as folks when they call us for services, have questions. Landlords weren't really dealing with some of our clients very well. You know, a veteran who has PTSD and maybe, you know, this certain time every year they have some problems and, you know, maybe they destroy their apartment. That landlord evicts them. When if we're the landlord, we kind of understand this is the nature of what they're dealing with. We have what we call wraparound services. I mean, they are constantly getting case management, supervision. And we train our supervisors who are non-clients to focus on these things. You know, if you start to see something, ask them questions, pull them aside, take them to lunch, you know, and just really be aware of the situation.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call if you support these types of businesses and want to see more of them. 614-292-8513. And Alan, this is for you. If someone is listening today and they want to start a venture like this, where do they start? With a phone call to you?
Well, yeah, I love emails much better. info@socialventurescbus.com. We set aside an afternoon every week just to talk to people who have that kind of question. But what I would also suggest is next Tuesday at Position to Prosper, which is free at the Columbus Museum of Art, you'll be able to meet 11 social enterprises like Eddie here who are doing things. You'll Clean Turn, who deals with formerly incarcerated, Freelamala Cart, that deals with survivors of trafficking, 11th Candle Company, who deals with survivors of trafficking, Hot Chicken Takeover, who deals with people who are formerly incarcerated. We have a tremendous number of these social enterprises, and we'll be featuring 11 of them at that. You'll get to meet them. You'll get to meet Eddie face-to-face. You'll get to talk to him and say, so I want to start a social enterprise, Eddie. What do I have to worry about, or what have you learned? Because what's great about this community of social entrepreneurs that are growing in our community is they want to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
They want there to be more social enterprises. They don't view them as competitors. They view them as fellow travelers. It's a most energizing, exciting evening you can have.
Eddie Rapp is the founder of Fair Haven Lawn Care, and many of the folks that you hire are homeless, have been incarcerated. A few years ago, I was on the board of Elvis, which you know here in Columbus is a nonprofit with the goal of assisting nonviolent offenders to get hired. And part of – as the board we saw, there were some businesses who were willing, but it was really difficult to get some of those to commit. Do you see this changing?
I do. I think part of that goes to Alan and Social Ventures, and I think getting the word out of what a social enterprise is, who these companies are hiring, how they're doing it. But I've seen a big change. You know, lawn care has been around for 11 years now, and we really struggled to get into, as Alan said earlier, some of the commercial places to say, hey, give us a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Residential even more so, because you're going to someone's personal home. And I think the combination of working with Social Ventures and just really educating the community, I think everyone's, you know, the drug epidemic, the homeless epidemic that's happening, it's very noticeable to people now more than it used to be. We used to say in Lancaster, Fairfield County, where I'm stationed, is it's the hidden homeless. You don't actually see them like you do necessarily here in Columbus. So it's really educating the community. But we're seeing a lot more people be more willing to allow something like this, or at least have the conversation. And I think that's what's key. Like Alan said, we email many other social enterprise companies in Columbus on a weekly basis saying, hey, we're having this issue, or we've noticed this, or you guys seeing the same thing.
So you have a little support group of sorts.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And Eddie, don't you find that as your customers repeat with you, they're actually proud that they're giving business to you because they're creating a difference by giving you their business?
That's probably – I can understand that.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the ways that sells it too. As a nonprofit, you know, LSS itself is asking for donations. And the donation arena has definitely changed over the past few years. You're getting more that want to do it online. More that want to come in and volunteer or see a product. And that's kind of what – with us, you know, as Alan said, we painted his house. He can see the product. The neighbors can see the product. And when you start to see the product, you get away from the concerns of having, you know, the stereotype of homelessness. But you also give a reassurance that, hey, I paid for a painting job, got a service back, and I did a good cause, you know, by hiring this group. Everybody walks away feeling better after that.
And you're a serious business. One of the things that when we decided to feature these 11 social enterprises this year for our fifth anniversary, they're very serious businesses. In the last 3 years, the 11 combined grew their number of employees by 49%.
Wow.
You know, their revenues grew 24% in last year. These are serious businesses who do a good job. And 10 years ago, it was like, well, they're probably okay. They're probably mediocre. I'll
right.
just do it to be nice.
Right.
These are very serious, competitive businesses.
And the customers are getting quality.
They're getting quality. They're getting their money's worth.
We're going to talk with Chuck from Gahanna. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air. Your comment or question this morning, please.
Oh, just a comment. I'm enjoying it very much. Thank you for doing this. I'm also a boomer, and I'm retired. And so traditionally in the past, I've always just made donations just like your guest was saying. but I'm on a fixed income now, and I was looking for a hobby, and I decided I'd go around to garage sales and thrift shops and that and buy a little knick-knack-type stuff that I liked, little antiques and that. But I can't keep them all. It's just too much. Like, I do a lot of watches. So I decided I'd sell those on eBay, and then I have a portion of it. eBay will allow you to donate a portion of it to various charities, and they've got a whole list. And in fact, I've written a couple charities and said you should get on this list because you can get donations. So if I get something at Goodwill, then I could put them down, and you can put any amount, whether it's 5% or 10 or 20 or whatever you want to send them. I had a Mr. Rogers thing I found, and I looked up the radio station. I think it was WQED that started that, and they had a charity fund on Mr. Rogers stuff. So I gave a portion of it to them.
Well, Chuck, it sounds like it's a very individualized type of social enterprise, and we thank you for that. Thanks, Chuck. I mean, that's a good example of what people can do on their own, right, Alan?
Well, and another example is Chuck said he's on a fixed income, but if you're on a fixed income, there are things you spend money on anyway. Who are you going to buy your coffee from? We have coffee roasters. You can buy coffee from our coffee roasters rather than going to Kroger. Who mows your lawn? Who paints your house? Do you buy candles for gifts? If you go to our website, socialventurescbus.com, and click on our marketplace, you can pick the product, sort by product, and you can find a social enterprise. So, but to me, one of the magics of social enterprise is you don't have to be rich to help. You don't have to have extra money to help. You can take what you're already spending and channel it towards a social enterprise and make a difference.
I love that.
It's magic.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. Listeners, you can join the conversation. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann. We're talking about social enterprises today. These are businesses that do good for the community through donations, hiring, or activism. With us, Alan Proctor, the president and CEO of Social Ventures, an organization that supports social enterprises, the founder of Fairhaven Lawn Care, Eddie Rapp, that is a social enterprise. And joining us is John Glazer, senior executive in residence for strategic development at Ohio University Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Affairs. He works with the Social Entrepreneurship Ecosystem Appalachia. Welcome to you, John.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Before we get into what you do, I do want to take this phone call. This is a phone call from Jay in Columbus, and he has a question that Alan says is a good question that we need to address. Alan, go ahead with your question, please. Jay? Yes.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about starting either a social enterprise or a small nonprofit, and I was just curious why you would choose one over the other, what maybe some of the differences are between those two.
Thank you very much, Jay.
That's a great question, because since social enterprise started in the nonprofit arena, many people think you have to be a nonprofit to be a social enterprise. Actually, what makes Columbus very different than the rest of the country is, while nationally about 86% of social enterprises are still nonprofits, here in Central Ohio, only 54% are nonprofits. We are almost at the point that half of our social enterprises are for-profits, and I'll tell you why. One of the real motives for social enterprise is the philanthropic world has changed in the last 20 years. Corporate donations, cash donations have been on a downtrend for over 20 years. Individuals, it's getting much more difficult to attract charitable contributions. One of the motives for nonprofits to go into social enterprise is they want to be able to sustain what they're doing. And if you have a business that's selling products, you can reliably know what you're going to have next year and the year after to support your mission.
If you're, an example is Life Care Alliance. So explain that, because I think sometimes examples help people understand the point.
Well, one of the big surprises for a nonprofit is you apply for a grant. They'll tell you 30 days before the year starts, did you have the money? Will you have the money? They give you money for 1 year. How do you build a long program with 1 year at a time? But if you start social enterprises, you've got some reliable sources. And Life Care Alliance is an example of a nonprofit that has formed many social enterprises in order to support what they do.
Like catering businesses.
And they
like
still
that.
Do fundraising, because what social enterprise does is it lets you do more of your mission. It's not a zero sum. So a nonprofit, you should understand, is a regulated business. It's actually, there's a lot more overhead cost and more expense to having a nonprofit than to have a for-profit business.
Okay, let's get to John. John, since May of 2017, the Social Enterprise Ecosystem Appalachia, you call it C for short, has assisted more than 90 startups and small enterprises. Tell us, what are these businesses doing and how it works there in Appalachia?
Oh, my. Well, I would imagine that it works similarly here as it does in other places. The challenges for resources and support are a lot more deeply felt here. But, you know, it's a venture development. It's starting businesses and addressing markets and building an organization, building customers. The same process of building a social enterprise, I think, is, the same elsewhere. I think as well that here, because many of the social challenges and are really the economic determinants, they're the factors in our economy that get in the way of economic growth. There are so many of those here that those are actually opportunities for enterprises. For example, we have a produce auction that has attracted over 190 farmers. It gives them a market for their goods. It's a social enterprise because it's trying to contribute to the local food system and provide market outlets for small farmers who wouldn't have those market outlets. And they've attracted nearly 1,200 buyers that come on a regular basis. And that addresses local needs and at the same time develops a business opportunity. I think over time, there's been over $1.5 million of revenue generated through that auction that benefits local family farms. And that's just one example. There are many, many others.
Now, John, that's really interesting. And you outlined how you're a lot of the same. But is the social enterprise in a rural part of Ohio different than maybe in an urban setting?
Sure. In the sense that there's not a concentrated population to be the market. And growing is often by replication rather than by increasing one's market share. Mm-hmm. So a successful local enterprise tends to be very place-based, very much embedded in the local community and serving the local community with support of the local community. And there's a cap on how much you can grow when the market size is limited. So many of the enterprises that we work with, we're trying to help them build operational systems and turnkey startup protocols so that they can grow by replicating themselves in other communities. And that's a spoken hub kind of method of growing, which might be different than, growing market share in a concentrated area.
Do you see these efforts as one of the only really ways now to sort of pull up the Appalachian community, because in many ways businesses, companies have left these folks behind?
Yeah, I think that's very important. Just as there are social determinants of health, so too there are social determinants of economic growth and resilience and viability. And by addressing social challenges with a market-based enterprise that, as Alan was describing, has a good chance of sustainability, then we're directly addressing those factors that are in the way of growing the economy. And then you're absolutely right. The the ability of rural areas across America to attract large corporations and create jobs in that manner is diminished not really the highest value proposition out there. One of the things that's really important is how big the social sector is in our overall economy. We're 5.5% of the gross domestic product. 10% of the private workforce is employed in the social sector. So it is itself a direct contributor to economic activity, and it's also a driver and enabler of economic activity because it's addressing and redressing some of the challenges that are in the way of other businesses finding a home here.
So let's talk about where some of that seed money comes from. Eddie, where did you get money to start your, let's just say lawn care? You know, you had to buy equipment, obviously. So what happened?
Well, we are very fortunate, since we're under the umbrella of Lutheran Social Services, to kind of have some of that ready to go. We also had equipment already at many of our properties. And we also use some of my personal equipment. I want to say the first year we were using my dad's truck and trailer and a borrowed mower. And then we kind of started pulling some equipment.
You do what you got to do, yeah, right?
Pulling equipment from some of our other sites. And then so it was a challenge at first. But, I will say after the first year, you learn a lot. You start to as Alan mentioned earlier, this was 11 years ago. So there wasn't too many people I could call and say, hey, how did you do this? Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of bumps and bruises that first year. But, you know, to get it started, we really used anything we could find. Some were donated, some tools, some rake, shovel. I mean, you name it. If we could find it, we were taking it. We hit yard sales to look for some of those tools.
So, John, is it different for you? How do you find seed money for some of these startups?
Yeah, capital access is really a challenge, especially in a rural area like this. At the same time, there are sources of capital. There are a motivated investment community that either wants its investments to have social impact or who look at their portfolio of investments and want some portion of their investments to be impactful. And every investment, people don't want to be stupid. They want their money to generate, good returns. But I think that folks are willing to accept maybe less than market rate of returns if their investment makes a big difference. So there is a motivated community of investors willing to support startup social enterprises.
Are you finding that in the Appalachian community, that there are businesses willing to help you out?
Yes, absolutely. And some of them are the foundation world that is beginning to look at their grant-giving function as investments rather than, simply doing good with the grant money itself. They're more and more interested in what is the social rate of return that their deployment of funds are creating. And so there's opportunity for community foundations, for motivated individuals, for civic and private leaders in the community to support these enterprises. And what you need is like a good idea, chances of success, and a good presentation to solicit those funds.
And that's interesting about the foundations, because for that foundation money, they could see repeat success or continued success.
I think that across the whole country, there's a generational change of leadership taking place. I think we find that in the entrepreneurial community, that younger entrepreneurs are much more interested in the social impact of their business ideas than perhaps they were in previous generations. There's new leadership coming to the foundation world. And, family offices, it's like folks really don't care anymore about putting their name on a hospital wing. What they want to do is move the needle on some of the social challenges that have plagued the country for forever, and that philanthropy has been unable to move very much, despite that being their mission and their passion. And so this market-based solution to some of these problems is a very attractive application of philanthropic funds these days.
Alan, when I mentioned that John was going to be on the show, you were familiar with John and his project, and John, I'm the same with Alan. Do you all talk to each other and try to help each other? Is there a I know you support the businesses themselves, but is there overarching umbrella that you talk to others that are like-minded?
Sure. Actually, John, you should talk about your Appalachian Regional Commission endeavor, which has really been three states. We all talk to each other because, frankly, it's evolving. Mm-hmm. The world we dealt with 5 years ago is not the world we're dealing with now. John was just talking about foundations. There's more and more foundations that are getting comfortable actually having more of their investment portfolio, not in IBM stock, mm-hmm. but in actual investments where they expect the return. They're still developing that comfort here in Central Ohio, but in other parts of the country, there are foundations that have very active investments, not grants, but investments, and it's coming along. It's coming along.
You mentioned what program should John talk about?
His Appalachian Regional Commission grant. Come on, John, that's exciting.
Oh, yeah. You know, we started off a year or two ago with a very small pilot project, and the Appalachian Regional Commission, which is a federal agency dedicated to the economic development of the Appalachian region and bringing about a transition from a coal economy to a more diversified economy, they saw the potential of social enterprises being an economic driver, and they had funded our project. And we had a footprint that serves not only the Appalachian region of Ohio, but also into West Virginia and have some partnerships in northern Kentucky as well. And the Appalachian Regional Commission saw that on the business side, there's a, you know, emerging class of entrepreneurs that are interested in starting businesses and developing them that address social problems, and this emerging class of investors that want to be a part of that. And so the Appalachian Regional Commission has been our major supporter and also our major megaphone, giving us a voice louder than we would have. Alan's absolutely right about the changing dynamics of the community foundation world and the growing interest in putting the portfolio of investments to work serving the mission of the foundation. And we spent a lot of time educating, socializing, helping people get comfortable with it. And certainly the collaborations and the advice and the opportunity to steal good ideas from each other is a real important part of our ecosystem.
Well, Alan, where do we go from here in Columbus?
I think where we go from here is really starting to engage the business sector and not just the retail consumer. A lot of our initial social enterprises were products that people knew about from their own personal consumption. But we now have 40% of our businesses, of our social enterprises, sell to businesses. Eddie Rapp's businesses are a really good example. I suspect your lawn care business is heavily commercial over retail. And getting businesses to really start realizing it. So we've done a couple of things. People want to know that they're not being hustled. There's so much fraud going on now, and you know, someone calls you on the phone, you don't know if they're real. So we've teamed up with the Better Business Bureau, and we have a social impact validation seal program that a social enterprise can apply for this seal, and we will validate that what they're saying really is
true.
And you can see that. We just finished a pilot with them that worked with 13 social enterprises. That's now we're going to the National Better Business Bureau to see if they'll jump on and make that a national program. I think what we're also trying to do is expand the sources of funding. Traditionally, the Columbus Foundation is starting to get more active on the investment side rather than just the grant side, though they've been tremendous with their Fund for Financial Innovation grant program. The Tony Wells Foundation has been a blessing for our community as an investor. What we're looking to have more, our Social Ventures Fund 1 had only 9 investors in it. It was $250,000. We can do a lot with that, but we're hoping that we can get more people to be more comfortable, and it'll be part of everyday conversation.
Alan, what you're doing is a good thing for our city and all the folks that work with you. Alan Proctor, CEO of Social Ventures. Eddie Rapp, the founder of Fairhaven Lawn Care and your paint business. Thank you very much, Eddie. And John Glazer, Senior Executive in Residence for Strategic Development at Ohio University, Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Affairs. Thank you all for joining me this morning. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. I'm Gail Hogan. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.